Pacifico, Bill Henry.
All right, let me get back on the line here, and welcome back to the world-famous Phil Henry Show. On the line with us, we have Charlie, and we have, I think we had Karen, or Jerry, actually, is with us. Charlie, you there?
This is Jerry, I'm right here.
But we're talking about here, folks, and welcome back to the world-famous Phil Henry Show. We are here discussing the Obama and Romney debate tonight. We've been discussing it for the last hour or so. We did have Bobby Dooley with us, and we're just taking phone calls from you. Our number 877-876-PHIL. And we're online at philhenryshow.com as well with our backstage pass. You can watch the show on Phil TV in HD. And we do thank you very much for we've had a terrific couple of months over the summer of people signing up for backstage passes and being a part of our BSP family, as we like to say. Now, so Mr. LaFountain, you're there, and where is this gentleman we have?
Daniel Jerry.
Jerry, are you there?
Yep, Bill is the Jerry Dobean here.
All right, hold on. Let me get over to Charlie, and let's start all over again, Charlie. When you were talking about you felt that President Obama did a good job tonight, that Romney did not do as well as other people said, correct?
That's correct, yes. I think I didn't hear Romney say anything that indicates at all to me that he has any better grasp on the reality. I think what Governor Romney has is a grasp on his ideas. But the question is, are his ideas relevant to the problems the country faces? I hear Romney being very dogmatic, and I hear President Obama being very pragmatic, and that is a similar, very dissimilar. That the pragmatist is the man who's going to respond to the problem at hand, and the dogmatic individual is an individual who's going to be inflexible. And I think of the two men. And I think you do need a flexible leader. You do need a leader who is going to be able to improvise. What we used to say in the military is improvise and to take advantage of a situation and tackle that situation.
All right, Jerry?
Yes, sir.
All right, what in your opinion is what?
Well, this man talked about a dogmatic. It reminded me of a joke. Man who said, I'm very dogmatic. He had turned a dog, not turned a dog. He had a robot for a dog. And it's a joke that I'd heard. I said, well, you got a dog? He said, yes, sir. He said, well, it's a robot. He says, well, it's dogmatic. I mean, it was an automatic dog. But let me say this about what Jim said. Pragmatic is good, and I want that in a president, too, but I'm not going to have an individual who is blowing this way down the wind. You know, you need someone who's going to say, this is the way it is, all down the line, and not be easily swayed. And I'm a man that wants someone who's going to have a very definite opinion on what he's saying. Excuse me for yelling, I'm in a cafeteria right now, in line at cafeteria right now. I'm having dinner with my sister-in-law and everything. Karen's there, Karen?
We're at Terry's Boys, Phil. We're at Terry's Boys.
And, okay, that's fine. We can hear you.
All right. I just want to be sure.
Okay, Charlie, how do you feel about that?
Yes, Charlie LaFountain here, sir.
Yeah, Charlie, how do you feel about that?
Well, I have to be, and I don't mean any offense. I have to be honest. I didn't hear the man say much of anything. I think he said that you want a man who will.
What I said was, you're Charlie, right?
Yes, sir, and you're Jerry.
Yeah, I'm Jerry, yes, sir. What you said, that you want a man's pragmatic, I think pragmatism is good. Don't get me wrong, I think it's very good. But I think we need someone to say, okay, now that I've heard all your opinions, and I've got this opinion, that opinion,
I'm not saying that. I'm saying, certainly I don't want someone who wavers with every different opinion. I want someone who can make a decision. But I do want an individual who will make the correct decision, even if it is opposed to the party platform. You see what I mean by the party platform?
I don't know. You know, talk about a party. Is that a little girl or something?
I didn't say party. I said party. Party. I'm sorry. I come from the Northeast.
Oh, you said party like a party platform. Okay, well, see, you are a man of your word. And you tell the voters that I'm going to lower taxes. I'm going to get the government out of your, you know, let's be honest, you know, it feels like you take government hand out of my pocket. I want the government out of my pants. I don't want the government in my pants. The government ain't been in my pants. And that's the thing I think is most offensive to all voters, that because they're going to, at the end of the day, say the government's not just been in my pocket, the government has had its hand shoved right down the front of my pants. And I find that offensive. I find it obviously it's invasive. And I think it also speaks to the, I'm going to give a 50-cent word now, the lascivious or salacious intent of the government, see?
I think that's childish.
Well, no, sir, I think if you look at it honestly, you won't say that.
I think that's childish. I think it's childish to say government wants to put its hand down your pants.
Well, I'm saying government has had its hand in my pants, sir. That's all I'm saying.
Well, I think that is a very sharp, a very pointed comment. And I think it's typical of people that are simply anti-government.
No, sir. Not anti-government. I'm serving the United States military, sir.
Good. I thank you for your service.
So that if I was anti-government, I wouldn't serve in the U.S. military. I'm a very proud Army veteran. All right, sir. I'm not anti-government. I am anti, you know, they call government entitlement. I call it government fondlement. Government fondlement.
All right, gentlemen, we've run out of time. Thank you, Charlie, very much.
I appreciate it, Bill. I enjoyed your program.
And Jerry, thank you.
You want to talk about it? Here's the camera.
Yeah, we got to run, though.
Hold on, Jerry.
Oh, Phil, we're having some dinner at Perry's Boys. Have you been over here?
No, I haven't. Perry's Boys is the...
It's the cafeteria. It's a lot of fun. You've never been? We were going to go to a Fresh Choice. I love Fresh Choice because they have the, what do they have?
They got the pudding, they got a pudding, what they call a pudding pile.
Yes, it's the pudding pile. Do you know that?
I don't know the pudding pile, no. I gotta go, though.
Have you been to Fresh Choice?
I've been to Fresh Choice, yeah.
They've got a big lump, a big, huge pile of pudding.
You gotta love it. I gotta love it.
Jerry, you know what he wants to eat? Let's go and run and jump in it.
All right, thank you very much. I'm sorry I had to hang up on her.
Look, she's going to call back and be all hurt and everything.
I'm sorry I don't, you know, if she's going to be all hurt and everything, fine.
Well, why do you allow people to go on like that, Phil? I don't understand that.
Why do I allow what?
That woman came on the program almost a full half hour ago, making a complete and utter ass of herself, and you didn't hang up on her.
I didn't hang up on her. She got it. Her brother came on the line, okay? And what, you know, Margaret, just do me a favor. Don't tell me how to do the show.
Well, Phil...
Just don't tell me how to do the show, and I'd really very much appreciate that. All right, our number is 877-876-7445. It's the world-famous Phil Henry Show. And remember, a backstage pass to our website gets you all kinds of marvelous goodies. Now, we announced on the show very briefly, actually announced on our pre-show very briefly a while back, that we are planning a one-man show, and we are indeed. As a matter of fact, we're planning on entering into a series of business decisions that will ultimately free me up from doing all this administrative stuff that I do in our business, and it'll also help us produce a one-man show. Really, really excited about it. If you're a member of our Backstage Pass family, you will have first dibs on where, how, when, tickets, etc., and you will get information first and foremost, okay? So that's one of the little perks. And there are so many other things that are going to be happening here over the next 12 months, I'm not even going to go into it.
Like what?
I'm not going to go into it, okay? You know?
Just said you're not going to go into it. Yeah, but you just, like what?
I just said I'm not going into it, man.
You said there's a one-man show.
Yes, but he said there's a one-man show and the rest he's not going to go into.
Okay.
Are you going to ask me now, like what?
Yeah.
I just said I'm not going into it, man. Jeez.
Yeah, but there's, like, I saw one thing on your desk today.
You shut up. You're not going to say anything. Anyway, go to our website, philhenryshow.com. We'll be right back with more out of the news pile today, more on the debate, and other things that are happening right after this. The world-famous Phil Henry Show, 877-876-7445. 7445.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back here at the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-7445, and online at philhendryshow.com. President Obama and challenger Mitt Romney differed sharply Wednesday night over taxes, Medicare, and especially the record of the last 4 years in a pointed but largely polite debate that highlighted the deep substantive. I just sometimes have a difficult time.
Well, isn't it? But the word is substantial.
No, the word is not substantial. There's the word. Does that look like substantial?
No, that looks like substantive.
That's what I'm saying.
All right.
But you don't mean to say substantial, though. Sorry.
In anyway, a polite debate that was highlighted by the deep substantive divide between the two philosophical foes. Romney portrayed Obama's tenure as an unmitigated failure, citing continued high unemployment, a rise in dependence on food stamps and other assistance programs, and disappointingly tepid economic growth. He said the president's trickle-down government was not the right answer for America. He said, quote, "I'll restore the vitality that gets America working again." It's very interesting when you hear a statement like that from any politician on either side of the political divide, and the guy says, "I'll get up going again, I'll solve the problem." Then they become the president, or they get into office, whatever it may be, and the problem continues, not always, but the problem continues, but they'll tell you, no, it's gotten better. You know, in other words, what's right in front of your nose is not what's happening. Or they'll say, obviously, somebody has someone in the opposing party, some force, some person, or just the platform of the opposing party, or just their voting record, has stopped me from doing the things that I want to do.
Well, what do you are you honest? Do you honestly think that they're going to say, you know what, I messed up and my ideas were bad, and
it would be refreshing?
Yeah, sure. They're never going to do it.
No, I know what Phil's saying, but I mean, that would be refreshing.
Well, they're not going to do it, Phil. They're not going to do that because that is political. Honesty is political suicide.
Honest? Oh, get a load of this. Honesty is political suicide.
Honesty is absolute political suicide. Yes.
Would you care to elucidate?
I'd be more than happy to. If you are honest with voters, then you are telling them essentially this. You're saying, number one, gee, I tried something and it didn't work. That's the way life is. That's the way things go. And they will say to you, well, we expected you to do a job that was going to get done. Well, I'm messing up what I wanted to say.
No, I know what you're saying, okay?
But I'm trying to say something, but Bud's sitting there. Would you ask him to take his fingers out of his nose?
I didn't do anything.
Are you picking your nose again?
One time.
It's distracting me.
But don't sit there with your finger up your nose. All right, Margaret, look, if I may.
Go ahead. But you're not going to change my mind.
Well, all right, then I shouldn't talk at all.
No, there's people out there who can have their minds changed.
You mean the people listening?
Well, yes, those are the people that need to have their minds changed. My mind doesn't need to be changed.
All right, well, let me just say to the people out there whose minds can be changed.
Oh, don't roll your eyes, Phil. You know, I've had about enough of that.
Margaret, when you say the following thing, you're right. You're right. Honesty does not necessarily get you a pat on the head. That's what you are trying to say.
Well, what else is there?
Well, wait a minute now. Honesty is always appreciated. It doesn't necessarily get you a pat on the head, but people will file that and say, well, this is an honest person. He saved me some time. I can actually now make decisions that are going to be better for the country based upon the information he's given me. And number one, he just told me, this politician, my ideas didn't work. Okay? Now, you say that that kind of honesty doesn't get rewarded. Well, the honesty that gets rewarded is simply the honesty that allows people to make a more informed decision. But nobody's going to pat a guy on the head for screwing the job up. You're going to get fired. you're going to get fired. Okay?
Well, that's exactly what I'm talking about. So how do you say that honesty rewards people?
No. I didn't say honesty rewards that person who was honest, but honesty will reward the system. Because if I'm a voter, and the guy stands there and says to me, my ideas were faulty. I thought they would work. They didn't. He has just given me some information that I need, which is, okay, this guy's out of ideas. Okay, he no longer has confidence in the plan that he has presented. I can now make a more informed decision as a voter. If that guy's going to smoke and mirror my ass and keep on telling me, well, the opposing party this and the guy that and some other bullcrap, then all he's doing is trying to confuse me. He doesn't want me to have information. He just wants to keep his job.
Well, if you're an informed voter, you'll know whether to fire him or not, won't you?
Yeah, you're right. I would know the guy smoking mirroring me, but I would be very upset with that individual because, you know, it wouldn't be a clean debate. There would be a lot of confusion. I would much rather have that guy say to me, I suck, my ideas suck, goodbye, I'm gone. All right, now, is he going to keep his job? No, he isn't. Nobody ever said that honesty means, okay, you were honest, you robbed the bank, well, that's fine, then you get to stay free and I won't put you in jail. No one ever said that that kind of honesty, that being that honest, is going to allow you to continue to be just a dirtbag. No. If you're honest, here's what you do. You save the system the time and the effort of going through the long process and the very expensive process of trying your worthless, crooked ass. So you've helped the people that way. Maybe, just maybe the judge will see his way to shortening your sentence or giving you a break. And maybe you played ball with the state's attorney or whatever. In the case of politics, if you're honest, you help declutter the field. You get your ass out of there and get somebody else in there that has a better idea what it is he wants to do. It does help the system. The individual is being honest. That individual, I think, probably somewhere out there in the grand karmic scheme of things, yeah, that probably has helped him, but I can't say for sure.
What do you mean by grand karmic? He's talking about just like in life. You mean like you go to heaven?
Well, no, I'm just saying, however it enriches the soul and however it may enrich one's life by being honest, you'll get those rewards, but certainly you don't get to keep your job. Now, that kind of honesty, there hasn't been that kind of honesty in politics maybe ever. We certainly don't have it in American politics. And I don't necessarily know that that's a bad thing. I can understand a guy bullcrapping the voters and saying, no, wait a second, I did a great job, blah, 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 boom. Okay. There's another kind of dishonesty that I hate. I hate this worse. It's the dishonesty of the political ideologue who says that every single solitary step of the way, my philosophy of conservatism or liberalism works. I hate that.
You see, that you just said then, essentially, that you hate me. Okay?
I don't hate you, Margaret. I don't like that philosophy, though.
Well, I happen to see that boy, you really stepped in it now. Do you believe in religion?
Do I believe in religion?
Yes, it's a simple question. Do you believe that people have religious beliefs?
Yes, I do.
All right. Do you believe that Christians, for instance, can someone be born a Christian and stay a Christian?
Of course.
Then why can't I be born a liberal and stay a liberal?
Because that's not politics. That's not a religion. That's a political philosophy. What are you telling me, man? That came from God?
Yeah, right. You think that voting for Obama came from God or something?
No, I didn't say that. But it is similar. All right?
How is it similar? How is it similar to say, well, I'm either a Christian or I'm a liberal or I'm a Christian or I'm a conservative, but it's the same kind of thing. My whole life through, I'm going to be a Christian, and my whole life through, I'm going to be a conservative. What the hell are you talking about?
You know something, Phil? I just don't think politics is something you understand. Politics is religious for a lot of people, and it does mean my father was a lifelong conservative. I didn't like his philosophy, but I respected that. He voted conservative every step of the way.
Even if it would have been disastrous for the country.
Yes, even if it was disastrous for the country, yes.
Well, isn't that admirable?
Phil, you're talking about my father. So don't, you know, just watch it.
Margaret, I mean, I don't mean any disrespect to the man, but isn't that the height of ignorance? Look at this. Where are you going?
I told you not to disrespect him.
You walked out of the studio for the second time tonight.
That's right, and it might be three times.
Well, you can't disrespect her father.
I didn't disrespect her father. I took issue with his philosophy of voting the party line.
I told you not to talk about my father.
Wow. We'll take a break. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Henry Show.
No, don't. Oh, wow.
Are you back?
Yes.
good. We're going to commercial.
Okay, now I'm leaving.
Why? Because I disrespected you by saying we were going to commercial?
Yes.
Phil Hendry.
You get up and walk out of here one more time, you're fired from the show. It's as simple as that, Margaret. And I'm not, there's no, you can't appeal this to David Hall. You can go off to David Hall. He's not going to.
David Hall will tell you to put me back on the show.
He doesn't tell me to do anything. Do you understand? He doesn't tell me to do anything. I do what I do on the show. I run the game. He doesn't. He is a partner. He consults with me. He goes out and sells the show. He does not tell me what to do on the show. If I want to can your ass, excuse my language.
You know, that's unnecessary, Phil.
Okay, but if I want to can you, I can. I'm sorry I have to talk to you that way, but you get up and walk out of here like that. It's wrong. All right.
Well, can I say something? I thought what you said during the break about Madeleine Albright being Madeleine Partbright was not funny. I've heard that line before.
I didn't know it was pretty funny.
No, you don't thought it funny?
I just said no, I didn't think it was funny.
All right, can I tell the audience? See, one of the things is when we talk about something off the air, and you want to just jump right into it, the audience doesn't know what the hell it is we're talking about.
Well, does the audience ever know what you're talking about, Phil? Seriously.
You know what, Margaret? I like to think that they can figure it out. But if we don't even give them a running chance at it... So let me just say to the audience, Dan and I and you and Bud and Robert, we were all discussing the October surprise, correct?
Yes.
All right. No, as far as I know, ladies and gentlemen... There has never been any real October surprise. And what is the October surprise? What was this? What is that? What's that term mean? The term, the first time I ever heard the term was during the Bush years, the most recent Bush, when the opposition to President Bush was so, like, paranoid. I mean, they were really weirded out by a lot of stuff. They thought Bush had some secret he was keeping that come October, just before the November election, he would spring it on the American people, and it would guarantee or ensure that he would be reelected.
Yes, and that. Why do you say that that was a fantasy? Madeleine Albright, a former Secretary of State, Phil, believed that there was an October surprise. Are you saying she's crazy?
No, I'm not saying she's crazy. I'm saying that Madeleine Albright, as distinguished a woman as she was and is, a former Secretary of State, a former ambassador to the UN, you're right about all those things, was so caught up in the post 9/11 fear and paranoia that, yeah, she bought into this October surprise thing.
The fear and paranoia. So now you're saying a former Secretary of State was paranoid. This woman was in line to be President of the United States. How dare you?
Oh, quit it. Will you?
How dare you?
No, not how dare me. This was what was going on, folks. People thought, and Madeleine Albright believed that this was a possibility, that Bush had already captured bin Laden and had him hidden somewhere. And when October rolled around, bingo, bin Laden would come out. There'd be photographs. See, we captured him. And Bush would be assured of a reelection. Never happened. Then there was the October surprise they thought would happen, which was the following thing. Bush is going over to Saudi Arabia. He's talking to the oil sheiks. And you watch, just ahead of the election, the gas prices will go down. Guess what? They went up. Because I kept track of that.
Well, what year are you talking about?
Well, there's only one election where the Bush, you know, where the Bush as an incumbent would have been, you know, viable, and that was 2004.
What about in 2000?
There was another president.
Yeah, but could have been a surprise anyway.
How's he going to surprise the American people when he's not even president?
Well, I don't, but, okay, what about, well...
What about 2000? Oh, yeah.
2008? That's what you were going to say.
No, I didn't. Not the two of us.
See, Margaret, every time you get caught, you make fun of how I say stuff.
No, I don't think so, Phil.
I do. So 2008 wouldn't have made sense because he wasn't going to be president. 2000, he wasn't even. It was 2004. And I remember all of the gibbering and the jabbering and the stupidity. Oh, my God. It was record-breaking. Let me tell you why Kerry lost that election.
Kerry lost that election because the neocons went out and bought a bunch of electoral votes. I don't know, but...
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's why. Let me tell you why Kerry... One of the reasons why Kerry lost that election, besides the fact that he ran a horrible campaign, it was a terrible campaign. He didn't know what he was talking about from one day to the next. I don't think he ever articulated any particular specific vision for what he wanted to do. It was the most half-assed bunch of ideas I ever heard in my life. But let me tell you the real... One of the real reasons. This guy, Bin Laden, and I've often said that dictators, totalitarians, they got no idea, they have no real understanding of American culture, or for that matter, just a free culture. So when Bin Laden made that tape, and in it he said that if you vote for George Bush, you're making a big mistake. Do you understand that that was basically like telling the American people, please do vote for George Bush?
I didn't vote for John Kerry. I voted for John Kerry because I felt at that, when I saw Bin Laden say that, I felt, all right, then I'll vote for John Kerry and Bin Laden will have no excuses. And so if he does attack the country, then we'll know for sure.
We'll know for sure what?
That he's a
douchebag.
Oh, well, you mean that the attack on 9/11 wasn't enough?
No one's saying that, Phil.
Then what are you saying?
Then what are you saying? You see, this is what happens. Your voice gets squeaky.
Yeah, but that's what Phil said. You make fun of the way he says stuff when he's got you.
No, he doesn't have her.
Yes, I do, and that's exactly what she did.
Well, Phil, this is what you sound like. You went, what are you? That's what you did.
Okay, Margaret, let's say I sounded like a girl. Let's say I sounded terrible. Let's say everything you say is true. It still does not address this issue. You voted for John Kerry because Bin Laden said to.
No, I did not. I voted for John Kerry because I took Bin Laden seriously. That's a different thing, Phil.
That he'd attack America again?
Yes.
That's a...
Go ahead, say it. Go on, say it. I dare you to say it. Gutless?
I won't say it.
I dare you to say it. That's what you were thinking.
Maybe. I won't say it. I'll let the audience decide.
You'll let the audience? Oh, baby.
Boy, that's pretty. That's pretty no guts of you, Mr. Henry.
Yeah, spit it out there, bud. Pretty what? No guts of me? Yeah, okay. All right.
Well, we're not going to just let it sit there. You're not going to let the audience sit there and think that I'm some gutless wonder, are you?
I didn't say you're a gutless wonder. I'll let you go ahead and articulate to the audience then why you voted for Kerry. I know you said that you voted for him because you felt that, you know, Bin Laden was serious about attacking America. I don't think that makes you look any better, but if you'd like to try to, you know, if you'd like to bail yourself out, go ahead.
I don't think so, Phil. Ladies and gentlemen, let me just say this. I love this country very much. My grandfather was a member of General Pershing's staff in World War I. My uncle was at Pearl Harbor and went on to fight valiantly in World War II. My family is a very proud American family. I voted for John Kerry in 2004 because I felt he would be the better man for president. And yes, okay, Bin Laden said that if Bush were elected, that he would attack the country. So I voted for Kerry because I wasn't going to give Laden or Bin or whatever they call it, Bin Laden. I know, Phil. I wasn't going to give Bin Laden the excuse.
You weren't going to give him the excuse. So in other words, if we voted for Kerry, Bin Laden would not be able to attack America.
He would have no excuse is what I'm saying.
Right. So, and if he did attack America, why, we go to what court to sue him?
Don't be asinine, Phil.
No, you're being asinine. If Bin Laden had attacked America after you said you didn't vote for Bush, you voted for Kerry because you didn't want to give Bin Laden an excuse. Well, let's just say for grins that Bin Laden is a psycho piece of garbage and he doesn't need an excuse. He just kills people for whatever reason.
Yeah, and your point is what?
So let's say he goes ahead and attacks America anyway. Are you going to be mad at him?
Then we know he's a liar.
Then you know he's already a murderer. He's already a murderer, but now you know he's a liar.
You know, this is when I really hate your living guts.
Don't get up and leave. Don't get up and leave. You get up and leave, I'm firing you.
Well, it's not fair.
Go ahead, get Frank on the phone or something.
I am going to get my husband on the phone. Call my husband up, please.
Frank, I can't do it till the break, Mr. Henry told me.
I said to call my husband.
I can't do it till the break, Mr. Henry.
No, don't. You don't touch the phone, Margaret. You don't get to touch the phone.
Oh, you really, whoo! Woo! You are really asking for it.
All right, here is something that I found that I think is very interesting.
What's that, your penis?
Shut up. Very funny.
I didn't get up and leave.
It's a news article. Do we have to break? I think we're going to break.
Oh, yeah, let's break so Phil can get his composure back.
Man, that's pretty funny, man.
No, it wasn't funny. What I'd like to get into when we come back are memorable debate quotes. And these are pretty memorable. These are memorable debate moments and quotes going back to 1960, the first televised debate. These would be presidential televised debates. And I don't really know if there were any presidential debates before the famous Nixon-Kennedy televised debate. That's the first one that was on TV. But is it the first presidential debate? I think, I don't know.
No, I've got to look up and find out.
We'll have to look it up and find out. We'll be right back. It's the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-7445. So there have been televised debates, obviously, before tonight's, and many of you have seen them, and many of you have seen fewer of them than others. I don't remember the first one. I was a little kid when the Nixon-Kennedy debate happened, but I think probably we're all familiar with one anecdote or another about it, the most famous being it was the televised aspect of it that got Nixon beat, because he that evening was not in the best of health. He had been in the hospital. He was a man who tended to perspire, and under the hot lights of the on the set, the lights that they brought on set, there was a great deal of heat and in the room that evening, and therefore he was prone to even sweat more, and he was even caught. I don't think he was caught on camera dabbing at his lip, but he was dabbing at the sweat on his face. Now, according to this article in the Los Angeles Times, it's rather interesting looking back on debates. The radio listeners, and this was a time when people were still actively using radio the way that we all use television now, and by that I mean people would sit down and listen to the radio as well as sit down and watch television. There was a big radio audience for presidential debates. Today, people are going to find a TV. And if they can't find a TV, maybe they'll look for it on the radio, but most of the time they won't. They'll just wait till they get home. The radio audience voted or opined or weighed in to the tune of, I don't know how many millions, but they felt that Nixon had won the debate. They were listening on radio. There were 70 million people who watched it on television. Now, the population of the country was smaller, so that's a hell of a lot of people. The 70 million TV viewers thought Kennedy had won. Now, the conclusion drawn from that might be, well, if it just came down to words, and that is one's ideas, the ability to state those ideas, etc., Nixon won. If it came down to that, but also image, that is the physical appearance, Kennedy won. And I say that because, as I said, Nixon had had a couple of weeks of health problems and didn't look his best. So he lost the debate, and there wasn't another televised presidential debate until 1976. And they say that's one of the reasons, because the image thing, the physical image thing, was just like a hang-up, you know.
Well, if you think about it, the next ones to debate would have been who? Goldwater?
Goldwater and Johnson.
Right. And neither one of those guys is a bargain. Then it would have been Nixon and Humphrey, and neither one of those guys was a bargain. Then it would have been McGovern.
McGovern, he sounded, well, I better not say.
You're going to say he sounded gay?
Yeah, sort of.
Well, I mean, and that was a problem as well.
Well, I mean, McGovern had, George McGovern, let's be honest, you know, come on. George McGovern might have been extremely liberal, and he was very liberal, and he was very... But, you know, George McGovern was a man. He was a man's man. He was a bomber pilot in World War II. He dropped just as many bombs on Germans and Japanese as anybody. He killed a hell of a lot of people. And as far as I'm concerned, that makes a man presidential material.
Yay!
Thank you.
You're kidding, right?
I'm slightly kidding, but, I mean, nobody could argue that George McGovern wasn't, you know, and he was a married guy.
He had a way of talking that sounded like this, ain't you saying?
Yes. And the line in Nixon that I thought was uncalled for, when President Nixon refers to George McGovern as a pansy poet socialist, uncalled for.
You know that that wasn't President Nixon, that was Anthony Hopkins.
All right, it was Anthony Hopkins, but it was still President Nixon.
It was Anthony Hopkins uttering a line that I don't even know if Nixon ever said that line. Okay, so...
What do you mean you don't know if Nixon ever said it?
I'm saying it was in a script... So it might not have actually been said.
Well, that took a pair on the part of Oliver Stone then to write it.
I don't disagree with you there. All right, in 1976, President Ford faced off against Jimmy Carter, hoping to catch up to the Democratic challenger's wide lead in the polls. President Ford at that time was, I believe, the only president in the history of the country to have been... nominated. Oh, no, he was actually a vice president. He was nominated as vice president, and he was confirmed as the vice president after Spiro Agnew resigned because of legal problems. Well, I mean, this was not a very good time for presidents and vice presidents. You had a president that quit. You had a vice president that was quit ahead of being indicted, who, you know, he. I remember it was Agnew.
Just spit it out, Phil.
Yeah, what are you trying to say?
Nolo contendere. That's what I was going to say. No contest. All right.
What did he do?
That's what Agnew pled to the charges of whatever it was. All right. President Ford faced off against Jimmy Carter, hoping to catch up, but he shot himself in the foot on foreign policy during the 1976 campaign when he said very famously, "There is no Soviet domination of Eastern Europe," a statement that surprised voters and Eastern Europeans alike. And the reason being that obviously there was. They were all communist states, Poland, Bulgaria, you name it, Czechoslovakia, Romania. The reason why I think Ford said what he said wasn't because he was not aware of the fact that the Soviets dominated that part of the world. Of course they did. And the Soviets stood there with their Warsaw Pact powers, their armies, their tanks, and they had invaded Hungary already. They'd invaded Czechoslovakia. I think Ford said that as a way of bucking up attitudes in Eastern Europe, of not talking down to people in Eastern Europe, of at least making it sound like he felt they were independent enough to at least consider themselves to be independent.
Yeah, sure, Phil.
All right, fine. He blew it. I mean, I'm just saying, you don't think for a minute the guy was dumb enough to think there wasn't Soviet control, do you?
That's exactly what I think. God bless Gerald Ford. I know he's no longer with us, but or is he? I think he is. Didn't he just have a stroke?
He's passed on.
You're sure?
Yes, he's passed on. President Ford is gone.
I know he had a stroke, and I just saw him the other day.
No, you didn't see him the other day. The man's been dead for a few years.
Well, I think he was that dumb.
All right, Margaret, no comment.
I see. It's just gotten so bad that you're just going to...
Yeah. Okay. In the next debate... In addition to reusing his "there you go again" line, Reagan deflected accusations that at the age of 73 he was too old for re-election. Though Democratic candidate Walter Mondale outperformed Reagan in the first debate, in the second debate, Reagan put an end to Mondale's upswing in the polls, brushing aside concerns over his old age. Mondale at the time was 56. And Reagan said to Mondale, "I want you to know I will not make... an age issue in this campaign. I'm not going to exploit for political purposes my opponent's youth and inexperience."
That's pretty funny.
He said that? Reagan said that, yeah.
I don't get it.
No, I guess you wouldn't get it.
Oh, what is that? Well, so I'm too dumb?
Basically, what he was saying there is that the you know what he was saying. He was making a joke out of Mondale being younger than him. Reagan was 73 at the time. Mondale was 56. Which means that Reagan was 17 when Mondale was born. I can't even conceive of that. So then we move on to the Bush-Dukakis campaign. And I remember this one vividly. It was pretty weird. When I forget, Bernard Shaw asked Dukakis whether his staunch opposition to the death penalty would be waived were his wife to be raped and killed. Dukakis, calm and without much emotion, said no. And though the former Massachusetts governor has stuck by his answer, his response to the atypical question did nothing to help the campaign. He was very matter-of-fact. You know, I'll tell you, Bernie, here's what I think. He didn't even take into consideration the fact that it was his wife who was the hypothetical person being raped and killed. He just went into this real straight.
Boy, that's really stretching it there. I mean, I don't see anything wrong with that.
Well, if you saw the debate, then you know what I'm talking about. All right, enough of that bull crap. There you have it. That is just a small look at debates past. I don't think there was any kind of a big moment in this one, but there's damn sure going to be one, because if history proves to be, if history proves to be something that does indeed repeat itself, then there's going to be a moment, sure enough, sometime in the forthcoming debates. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show will be back with our News and Information Hour, which is just like what we've been doing here and in the last hour, and like that when we come back.
Yes, but there'll be more moments about the debate, right?
No.
Well, then I don't really... Never mind.
Phil Hendry.